Good evening or good morning, depending on you're watching this. Welcome to Hoops HD. This is Hoops HD Report Final Four Edition. Am I coming through here?
Sort of.
Yeah.
Try to fix a bike.
There you go. Yeah, good job, Chad.
Off to a real good start here, as always.
Here we are at the end of March, and Chad is still trying to figure out how to run the show. Right, that is,
at least I'm not calling this the Bracket Racket or something like that, like I did. What's this, the Underage right. Show? We did that one years ago, didn't we?
Yeah, something. I don't know. But, yeah, the Bracket Racket.
I'm Chad Sherwood. We got Rocco Miller, Matt Zukowski, John Titel, David Griggs with me. John Stalica may jump in at some point here. He was running a little late this evening. But we got a lot to talk about. Starting with the NCAA tournament. It's been a few days since we've actually seen NCAA tournament games, but we have the Final Four coming up starting Saturday, and why don't we just start right on off by putting the brackets up on the screen. How does that sound? And there it is, I hope, if I did things right.
Who knows? It's on there.
And let's start things off right in the South region, which was the region of insanity. And John T., let me bring you right in here on this and what happened in the South with Kansas State beating Kentucky, then Loyola Chicago, Sister Jean, in the Final Four, 11 seed. I know you had it in your bracket, so tell us your thoughts about what we saw.
I wish I'd known about Sister Jean, because picking against God is never a good idea, especially in the NCAA tournament. She led her team to a bunch of three in a row amazing wins. Dante Ingram with the three at the buzzer to beat Miami by two. Clayton Custer with the fadeaway J in the final seconds to beat Tennessee by one. And then Marcus Towns with the three in the final seconds to beat Nevada by one. And they destroyed Kansas State, which makes no sense after all the close games. One of the hottest teams in the nation, obviously, all four of the teams that make the Final Four are pretty hot. This team has won 21 of 22 with only a two-point loss at Bradley in January, standing between them and months, plural, of perfection. The thing is, I don't know what to make of them because this is the region of upsets. So they've only had to play one top five seed, not just in the past month, but all season. Tennessee, by far, is the best team they've played, and they beat them. They have balanced scoring, five different guys scoring in double figures. They make shots. They don't allow a lot of points to the opposition, top five in both of those. They have a chance to win, but I don't know what they're going to do when they face another top five seed like Michigan.
They did win at Florida. Now, I know Florida is not as good as Tennessee, but the fact that it was on Florida's court, I think, says something. And, you know, that's the same floor that Kentucky was blown off of. So they were pretty good, but it is a little bit historic. We've seen 11 seeds get this far before. We saw it last year, actually, Xavier getting in there as an 11 seed. But this is the first time – What's Elite Eight? Yeah, I'm sorry. We've seen 11 seeds in the Elite Eight in the Final Four, but this is the first time. My thinking was correct. My speech was not. This is the first time a team that was outside the bubble had ever reached the Elite Eight and now the Final Four. They would not have been in this tournament had they not won the Missouri Valley Conference tournament, and they had to sweat out that quarterfinal game that you might remember against Northern Iowa, and some of us thought that that was going to be a hard game for them to win because Northern Iowa, while they had an awful conference season, they were really good back in November and December, but they've been good all year, and it's just kind of crazy to think that not only like the Butler teams that made the Final Four were legitimate top 25 teams all year long. George Mason, I'm not going to say it wasn't a big surprise, but George Mason had four losses and was ranked in the 20s throughout the year. They had won at Wichita State. They had done some things to indicate that they were good, and they were selected by the committee. This team would not have been. So it is historic that they are still playing.
Yeah, the two prior 11 seeds have made the Final Four, LSU, which was got in through an at-large bid, VCU, which was a first four team, so obviously an at-large bid as well. Rocco, you were high on this Loyola team all season. We were doing our under-the-radar shows and how this team, I think other than their game against Boise State, they could have won every game they played this season.
Yeah, and I mean, besides the couple they lost without Custer, I think they're now up to 31-2 with Custer on the court. And that Boise State game, you know, you go back and look at their schedule, they actually – played Friday and Saturday night in a two-game event down in Savannah, Georgia, and then they had to go all the way 2,400 miles up to Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, they had to hitchhike. I mean, this team's on a budget. Out there, thumb and run.
Exactly. So I give them a pass for that blowout loss to Boise. I mean, that's a real tough task to ask a team that only plays seven players, really, and going on that long trip. But, yeah, and then throughout the year, you know, they've just done it, and it's well-publicized and documented at this point, but they do it with really great team defense. They rotate. They don't have a deep bench, so they need to switch off the ball. They can't just stick to a standard man-to-man and sub in and out. The key to the team, I think, especially coming up against Michigan, is the big man, Krutwig. If he stays out of foul trouble, they need him in there to deal with Michigan's size. But they had the same obstacle with Miami, and they trailed a lot of that game. They ended up pulling it out at the end. And then they've been able to match up very well against Nevada and Kansas State just based on their personnel. So they got a great draw in those two rounds. But this team, they're going to be in it till the end of the game, and all they need is a little bit more magic at the end, and they can win another one, I think.
Yeah, Matt, I think you're in the Chicago area, correct? Yeah. I mean, what is the most like there for the historically with a national championship back in the 60s as well, the best team in Chicago all time?
Oh, yeah. Right. Hey, nothing else, Chicago, we know how to bandwagon our teams. It is. Chicago is all aboard the Loyola bandwagon. I think, like, if a sports reporter or whatever is not with either the Cubs or White Sox right now on opening day, they're covering Loyola. And I think it's because, like, at least this is a good story that's catching on in that under-the-radar program, but with some history. And that I think it's going to be a tough game against Michigan because it's, like, the first time they've played against a team that executes as well as them on both ends. And I think Michigan definitely has the better athletes, better personnel. So I think this might be some trouble for Loyola.
Tell you what, let's head over to the West region, which was won by Michigan. I believe that Sleeka has joined us. Sleeka, are you here?
I am here, but suffering technical difficulties.
All right. Well, John S., now that you are somewhat with us, let's talk a little bit about what did happen in the West region, where Michigan looked pretty darn good coming out of this region, actually.
Yeah, it was certainly a complete 180 as far as Texas A&M going from a blowout loss against Carolina to a game where Michigan just couldn't miss against A&M as far as the Sweet 16 goes. But the other side of the bracket, they also caught a break where Killian Tilley was not available for Gonzaga, hence their loss to Florida State. But I think what got more headlines was while Michigan was winning a relatively close game against Florida State, it looked like Leonard Hamilton threw in the towel a little bit early against the Wolverines, considering they were only down 4 with 12 seconds to play, but chose not to extend the game with the fouls for whatever reason.
A lot of things, they were down by 4 going into this last possession, and they took what you might describe as a poor shot. Like one-handed overhead, wild contested shot with about 13, 12 seconds left. Now, at this point, the chances of winning weren't very good, but they could have done a little better than that. They had time. I hate that when announcers say they don't need a 3 when a lot of the times they do, or a 3 would be very helpful. But I don't know if it was just not being aware of the game situation, because they had a chance to foul, and I don't know if they just didn't want to foul that particular player. And, you know, after a few seconds ran off, they were just like, well, forget it. I don't know if it was Leonard Hamilton deciding not to foul as much as it was a player or two on the court just not realizing the situation.
Well, Rocco, I think that KenPom had it at like a 96 or 97% chance to win with 4 seconds left and without the ball at that point. But you still have a 4% chance to win, unless you give up and walk off the court like they did, don't you? Right.
Yeah, there's always a chance to win in that situation. It's crazy though that worked out the way it did. One thing I want to point out about Michigan is their defensive prowess. You know, I just talked about Loyola Chicago's defense. Well, Michigan's, if you look at KenPom, they're the fourth best adjusted defense. In fact, we have all four teams inside the top 41. So there's a common theme there. But Michigan with their athletes and what Loyola Chicago needs to do in terms of moving. They depend on a lot of quick ball movement and a lot of just finding the open man. They typically pass 4 to 6 times a possession. I think with, you know, I just think with Michigan's athletes and their length, you know, there could be a lot of problems there. And that defense suffocated Florida State for much of that game to get them out of the early hole they were in.
Well, and Tytel, Michigan now in the Final Four, having beaten a 14, got a miracle win against a 6, beat a 7, beat a 9, and now they get an 11. I mean, talk about having the bracket fall your way right to the national championship game potentially here.
If there's anybody who's had as favorable a road to hoe as the Ramblers, it is the Wolverines. I still don't understand how Jordan Poole made the miracle buzzer beater.
Yeah,
Houston. I mean, it's gonna live on in history if they can win it all, because they would not get the title without that shot. But they destroyed Texas A&M. They beat Florida State despite having a horrible shooting night, 4 of 22 from behind the arc. They only lose to good teams. 7 losses this year. Each of them were top 100 teams. They've won 13 in a row. They could still reach the title game without playing a top 5 seed because everybody got knocked off ahead of them. And like Rocco said, the defense, amazing. 63 points allowed, number 8 in the nation. The only concern I have, and I think Michigan's going to win this game, 66.2% from the line, bottom 30 in the nation. If this becomes a free throw battle, and unlike Coach Hamilton, people decide to foul Michigan, they could choke at the line, but I don't think we're going to be there.
Well, let's turn over to the half of the bracket where sanity did reign. Although, got to get back on the screen there. There we go. Matt, I know you picked Kansas lose in the first round. Instead, they're in the Final Four. But so you know I got a call on you for this one.
Oh, yeah. No, that I can't believe this Kansas team made the Final Four. Especially the Duke game, I give credit. Like, Svi Mykhailiuk, I don't know where that guy's been in his career, but he looked like one of those Marquette forwards battling of like the Czar Hayward, Jimmy Butler type, Jay Crowder's battling his rear off against Wendell Carter and like out rebounding him, being tougher on the inside. And man, they somehow beat Duke, even though Duke will have 4 guys drafted probably before Kansas has one.
David, I mean, this Kansas-Duke game, people were calling it one of the great games of all time. I thought it was a great game. You can't say that, but I don't know that
it was. Games
of all time, does it?
No, not of all time. I mean, it was a great game, as you said, but I hadn't even really heard anybody say that. It was a good game. Had Grayson Allen hit that shot at the end of regulation, how sick would we all be of Grayson Allen right now?
And Rocco, one of the reasons why I didn't think it was a great game was I think Kansas should have won this game by about 10 or 12 points in regulation, but so many open threes late in regulation that they missed.
Yeah, they missed a lot of open shots down the stretch. They had the chance to put it away. These are two teams, too, you know, that I feel like, you know, the NCAA probably would have loved to either have one or the other, so it was kind of nice to see them go up against each other, just because I feel like when either of these teams play pretty much anybody else besides maybe Syracuse or North Carolina, and of course Duke never plays North Carolina in the tournament, that you actually get to see a pretty well-balanced officiated game, and maybe I'm the only one who notices that, but it was cool to just see them go at it the whole day and then go to overtime, and Grayson, of course, we don't have to hear about him now, so congrats to Kansas. They got the win close to home, and now they have a tough test, real tough test.
Yeah, Tytel. I mean, how do you like this Kansas team if they keep playing like the way they did in these two games? Is this a team that you think cuts down the nets at the end of the day?
I don't. I picked Villanova, and I'm going to stick with them just because they're playing so great. That being said, like, Kansas is a one seed for a reason, and anybody who beats Duke in the Elite Eight, because it rarely happens, is a legit candidate. Anybody can be 10 after trailing by double digits in the first half. I mean, come on. What's amazing is the obstacles this team has overcome in Kansas. So they had a McDonald's All-American, Billy Preston, leave school in January because of an NCAA investigation into his car accident. If 3 transfers sitting out, the 2016 American Rookie of the Year in Dedrick Lawson, the 2017 AAC Rookie of the Year in KJ Lawson, and Charlie Moore, who all he did in his second game at Cal would score 38, the 4th best scoring performance by a freshman in Pac-12 history. Can you imagine, like, if they all are eligible and good next year, we could see the dynasty continue.
I think from a historical footnote, that's only the second time I remember Duke actually losing a regional final, because the first one was in 1998 when Kentucky came back from a, I think it was a 16-point deficit, beat Duke to advance to the Final Four and ended up winning the title that year.
Well, it, as gruesome as it was, we learned later or earlier in this year that Kevin Ware didn't actually break his leg because that game was vacated, but that was an Elite Eight game against Duke.
Okay, yeah, I said that. Yeah, I remember Coach K had two Elite Eight losses going into.
No, that never happened. It never happened. Duke didn't lose that game because it was never played.
Kevin Ware never broke his leg.
Okay. I think actually vacated technically won. Vacated the vet, passive in the bracket.
No, that's Rocco, a 4 foot. They don't. Okay.
Rocco, Villanova came out of the East region, not exactly easily, but they did survive here, especially in a tough game against West Virginia.
Yeah, the West Virginia game felt like a heavyweight fight for the first 35 minutes. And I think West Virginia got a raw deal getting a 5 seed. You know, maybe a 4 seed probably where they belong, but they had a good case for a 3. You know, obviously that all worked itself out with the Marshall upset and then obliterating them. But it was unfortunate because I thought West Virginia was good enough to make a run to the Final Four in the other regions if they were in those regions. But running into Villanova and then just having them finally outlast the press in those last 5-10 minutes, it was really impressive. But West Virginia, very talented team. And then the Texas Tech game, you know, Texas Tech came in very confident after a nice blowout win over Purdue, taking advantage of the Haas injury. And Texas Tech was ripe, you know, ready to take on Villanova. Coach Beard had that team ready to play. But Villanova turned it around pretty quickly. And then a couple late charges by Texas Tech at the end, Villanova was able to withstand that. I was very impressed with some of those possessions down the stretch where Jalen Brunson was actually, like, you know, not just hanging out in the backcourt. He was posting up his man down low and backing him down and you know, basically using post moves to ice the game. It was very unique and shows how talented that guy is.
Yeah, Matt, I was unbelievably impressed of all the teams. Of the four teams, I think Villanova by far the most impressive this past weekend.
Well, yeah, I think, yeah, they had by far, I think, the toughest round. You know, they had Kansas against Duke, but then they had faced undermanned Clemson in the Sweet 16, where Nova had to face a really good, really tough West Virginia team in the Sweet 16. And then Texas Tech just as tough, a little bit different style. And that to beat both of those, survive against Texas Tech, they couldn't hit a shot for the life of them. They still win by 12 points. So, yeah, this definitely the team to beat here. I guess, put this way, you could probably mark Kansas down for a win now, because I think I'm predicting Nova by double digits in that game. But
I just went to Texas Tech. They'd never gotten this far in their history. They weren't expected to be nearly as good as they were in a 10-team league. They were, I think, picked 7th or 8th, weren't even expected to be in the tournament. They got off to a roaring start. They ran into injuries. They took a team in the West Virginia in the latter part of the season where 3 starters didn't even travel, I think. And I don't ever think that Texas Tech got the national notoriety that they really deserve. I mean, as good as they were and as high in the rankings as they got, they were still kind of not in the spotlight, even all the way to the Elite Eight. But it was one of the most impressive coaching jobs and turnarounds of the entire season, if not the most impressive. So I just wanted to give them a shout out, even though they didn't make the Final Four.
Yeah, and Tony Bennett for being the first 1 seed ever to lose to a 16 won the AP Coach of the Year award today, while Chris Beard did not. So Tytel, we have our Final Four now: Loyola versus Michigan, Villanova versus Kansas. You already told us Villanova is going to win it all, but what do you see happening in these three games that we have left here?
As much as I hate going against Sister Jean, I got Michigan coming out of the left side, and as good as Kansas is, and Bill Self, great coach, Devontae Graham, one of the best players in the nation, 5 starters who can go against anybody in the country. Villanova, without any seniors of note, are just ripping through the postseason. 3 Big East tourney wins and 4 NCAA tourney wins by double digits, 7 in a row. I don't think they're going to be Kansas by double digits, but I think they're going to make it 8 wins in a row over Kansas and 9 wins in a row on April 2nd to beat Michigan in the title game.
I read earlier also about this Villanova team that over the last 4 years, they have now set an NCAA record for the most wins for any team ever over a four-year stretch. I don't have the exact figure, but that's how impressive they've been recently.
Well, thanks to the NCAA record books, that actually would have been Memphis under Calipari, but they get it once again, wins the day.
Right. Well, and the whole thing with Loyola, I kind of wanted to say this earlier. Sister Jean, don't you think she's getting a lot of the press that Tim Miles should rightfully be getting had it not been for the dark web conspiracy? I mean, come on.
Well, hey, Nebraska probably belongs to the Missouri Valley. No.
What the hell is that supposed
Stalika, what do you see happening in the final? I'm going through each of you on it. We've got Titels.
Yeah, I'm thinking that Michigan is probably going to overcome Loyola Chicago. I think Kansas is actually going to get some revenge from 2 years ago when they lost the Midwest Regional Final to Villanova, given how both teams have played over the past week. So in a close final, I'll probably say Kansas wins their second title under Bill Self.
Rocco, teams seeded 9 or worse have now made the Final Four 6-7 times now. It's 0-6. Isn't the 11 seed due?
They are due, and I would love to see it. And I'll be cheering for the Ramblers, I'm not going to lie. However, I do think, you know, down the stretch, I think Michigan will pull that game out. I do think it's going to come down to the last minute, which will be great. It'll be very entertaining. And it's going to be the first game on Saturday, lots to look forward to. And then spill right into a battle of the one seeds with Villanova, Kansas. And based on, you know, some of the things I shared earlier, I can't pick against this Villanova team. I'm sticking with them, even though they did break Kansas's hearts 2 years ago in the Elite Eight. And then in the final, I'll go with Villanova over Michigan. I think Michigan will – once again, just fall short. I know they've been here so many times before to get to that national final, but haven't won it since '89. So, unfortunately for the Wolverines, they'll fall short again, and I'll go with Villanova.
Matt, how about you? Where are you looking at happening?
Yeah, I'm with pretty much the consensus. I think Nova wins comfortably against Kansas. I think Michigan wins somewhere 3 to 4 possessions against Louisville, so right on the borderline of double digits. I think Nova beats Michigan a little bit closer, but comfortably enough, like 6 to 9 points maybe. I think Nova wins it with fairly ease.
Well, you know, 2 weeks ago when we were doing our pre-NCAA tournament show, one of us here picked Villanova, Kansas, and Michigan all in the Final Four. Yeah, I had Kentucky as my fourth team and had Villanova winning it. So my brackets actually look great, despite all the chaos we've seen. But David, what about you? Could you do something other than Villanova over Michigan, which is where I'm at also?
Well, I think I pretty much have to. Villanova has been insanely good in this tournament, but so is Kansas. I mean, they just knocked out Duke, who I think a lot of us were picking into the Final Four. They also won 3 games to win a rather good Big 12 tournament, so they've also won 7 in a row. They're kind of on the same trajectory that Villanova's on, and they've overcome a lot. Now, if Villanova comes out and their shots are struggling, they sort of live and die by the 3, I think Kansas can beat them, and I think that Michigan once again loses in the championship game.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and pull that down. That is our NCAA tournament preview there. But we got a few other things we want to discuss. And let's start
reseeding the Final Four.
Okay. David, you want to reseed the Final Four?
Well, this is just one of the things, and I'll just say this real quick. Like, you hear it brought up every year. They're never going to do it. I don't think the NCAA's ever considered it. But the media, you know, brings it in the motion every year. I'm kind of curious to see what you think, but I think that they should just go ahead and reseed the Final Four, but based on what teams have done in the tournament. And the only, okay, so starting off with Loyola, they beat 4 at-large teams. They're the only team that really did that. They also beat a protected seed on the way. They've had the toughest road to the Final Four, so I think they're the one. Nova and Kansas, the 2 1 seeds, they had they both had an easy first round game, but they've looked pretty good. And then Michigan, how do you not have them as the fourth one based on the easy road that they've had? So I think they should reseed the tournament to make it Loyola Chicago versus Michigan and Kansas versus Villanova.
David. Okay. I don't even know if I need to address that. But why don't we go on and discuss a few other things? And Sleek, let me bring you in here at the NIT, which we just saw the championship game. Penn State beating Utah fairly handily. What were your thoughts about the, first of all, about the Nittany Lions at this event?
Well, I mean, we were expecting a preseason. They had a chance to make a deep postseason run. Granted, this isn't the net we thought they would be cutting down, but it does show some promise given that they do have a young core in place that will be there for next year, mainly what will be their junior class.
Rocco, we also saw, I don't know how much the NIT you caught, but we saw the experimental rules. We've discussed quarters at length, but it's also a three-point line move, lane wide. I mean, what did you think about some of these rules they threw out there in the NIT?
Yeah, I think the three-point line is the one I'm in favor of out of any of them. I'm a little concerned about the quarters. I'm with you guys. I'm a traditionalist, so I want to keep it as half. I understand that the initiative to go to quarters from the NCAA's perspective and from all of basketball's perspective, but I do think the three-point line does need to move back. I mean, there's so many teams you can watch. We watch, you know, me, you, and Stalika and David, we watch games in the small conferences, and there's still enough guys out there flicking the wrist, three-pointers like a free throw. Make it a little bit more challenging. I think Ken Pom did a nice little study. He released it 2 days ago. Where in the NIT, they've done it now, I think, for 2 years where the three-point line was moved back. Or maybe that was preseason NIT yet last year, but there's been two tournaments. So 59 games worth of data, and the overall average for all of college basketball during the season is 37.9 beyond the arc this year. And in the NIT, it was like 34.5. And so I think that's just enough of a difference to make it a challenging shot and change the way coaches call plays. I am for that, but I don't like the widening of the lane. I want defense to be important, and I want halves, not quarters.
I kind of stand with you on that. One of the things that hasn't happened, and I didn't watch as much as the NIT this year or last year. I watched the CIT, and I obviously watch every NCAA tournament game. But based on what I did see, it didn't really create or bring back the mid-range jumper. You know, there was a time in college basketball where you saw that a lot. When the three-point line was introduced, it was either that kind of went away. If moving the three-point line back would bring that back, I'd be in favor, just because it adds another dimension and another strategy to the game that I think would make the game better. But that hasn't happened in the years that they've moved it back. It didn't happen when they moved it back the last time either. But I agree with Rock. I'm in favor of moving the three-point line back. And I don't know if you know this, but I am very much against quarters. I don't need to know how much time is left until
we've heard that 10 million times, David.
I don't like quarters.
About this three-point line.
Football should not play quarters.
Tatel, what are your thoughts on that issue? You know, one more opinion here on this three-point line. Does it need to be moved back?
I mean, need to. I think this is another thing that you're trying to find a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. Ain't broke, don't fix. And obviously it didn't affect Shep Garner. Set a Big Ten record by making his 120th three of the season. Think about this. He used to be known for being Flava Flav's cousin. Now he's taking it up a notch. In March, he made 32 threes. A lot of guys can't make that in a season. He made it in March.
I thought he's a senior too, right?
I believe.
Yeah, that's the one underrated factor is losing him. He's such a good floor spacer for them that as good as Carr and Stevens are, I think, yeah, they're going to need to at least find a decent floor spacer to replace him. Yeah, that allows the Carr and Stevens to go to work down to the basket.
Well, let's talk about a couple other events that are going on. And Matt, let me stick with you for a second. Being a Chicago guy, there might be two championships in Chicago as tomorrow night, the CIT championship game, Illinois-Chicago at Northern Colorado. As much buzz as there is for Sister Jean in the city for UIC?
Not quite. I'll say this. What actually was like UIC doing this without star player Dikembe Dixon left the team toward the end of the year. I think he's now going pro, but that they're making this run without a key guy, perhaps to Steve McClain and his crew there.
Yep.
And we got that game, and also Rocco, you being our guy in the San Francisco area, San Francisco, North Texas, in Game 3 tomorrow night of the CBI Finals.
I love it. Yeah, it's the Dons, you know, came out strong in the first game, basically blew them out, and then North Texas made a little rally at the end to lose by I think 9 or 10. But North Texas got their revenge last night, and I think they stay out there in Denton for the third game. Right? Is that right?
They do.
Yeah, it's
with it being in Denton, and I know that's a college town, I think they're going to pack the house, and I think that's going to be too much for the Dons to overcome. I'll take the mean green.
Yeah, David, I got to ask you, got to mention one thing for you. I want to ask you about the CBI, but North Texas entered this tournament 15-17 overall.
Right.
That in itself, is that not a major problem?
It is, but it's a pay-for-play tournament, and if your coach is represented by the Gazelle Group, you have a huge advantage. I'm not a fan of the CBI. You know that. I won't get into the reasons why, but I am intrigued about the two championship games being played on the same night. First, the CIT, I know we already talked about it, but both teams, but Northern Colorado in particular, had fewer than 10 Div 1 wins a year ago. Now upwards of 20. And I think that the experience of going through a win in advance, losing your out conference tournament can pay dividends. And I think both of these teams are going to be good next year. But how are you not intrigued by both these games on the same night, one of them in Denton that's right in the Dallas general area? And what I would like to propose is that we go back to the Dallas Cowboy training facility and we bring back the curtain and we have both games going on in the same building at the same time. Can we make that happen?
Well, they're actually going to be played at the same time. They're both 7 p.m. Eastern tips tomorrow.
Yes. You know, all the more reason to just...
let's just mention it briefly. Titel, the women's Final Four set, that starts tomorrow night as well. Such parity in the women's game as we have 4-1 seeds in the Final Four, and UConn is going to win it easily in both, and they take home the championship. I just want to ask a question. Is there a problem in the women's game?
No, I thought UConn was going to win it easily last year, and boy, was I wrong. I think they are the favorite, and I think they will win, and I think they could do so by double digits in each game. And Gino is having like that is the greatest college basketball coach ever, if he's not there already, because he gets reloads every year with high school All-American after high school All-American. I don't think it's a done deal, though, because last year was the amazing upset, so anything's possible. But, yes, they're probably going to win.
Yeah, but it is. We're at a point now where any loss by UConn is an amazing upset.
True.
So,
right. when UCLA was I wasn't alive yet, but when UCLA was dominating in the 60s and 70s, was there intrigue to it? I think there was, because while they won every game, they weren't winning every game by about 50 points. You had like these showcase games. They were on the TBN game of the week time after time after time and running this gauntlet. And maybe that was good for the game in one sense, because everyone tuned in to see if the teams had what it took to beat UCLA. Connecticut is so overwhelming in the women's game that I think they lose what would be casual fans, even like myself. Because I watch part of their game against Duke, and it was a 20-point blowout at halftime. Why watch the second half?
Yeah, I've got no interest in turning to see them play another one seed tomorrow night, because I know that Notre Dame's not even going to keep the game close with them.
Congratulations to them. All the credit in the world. It's not their fault. If it was so easy to do, then why isn't anybody else doing it? They should do absolutely nothing to change anything about what they're doing. But is it a situation or a problem or an issue, as you say, with the women's game that kind of hurts it holistically?
Let's move on to one other subject, though, and that is a new event that's starting tomorrow night. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is the 3x3U tournament. This is set up for this tournament. It is only seniors who have exhausted their eligibility. Therefore, there's money involved. Each win by a team is going to give $1,000 to that team. Winning the championship will give $50,000 to be split among the team. The teams mostly are four players each. A few teams only to give you three players plus a sub, but some teams are having a fourth player. I believe the rules are it is up to a 10-minute game, first team to 21 wins, or the leader after 10 minutes. Regular shots are worth 1 point, three-pointers are worth two. I know you did post an interview with one of the selection committee members. Did I cover that correctly?
Yes, there's like 10 other rules, but I think that you got the biggies. I talked to Matt Santangelo, former Gonzaga star, now executive director of the Spokane Hoop Fest Association, the world's largest three-on-three tournament, getting 6,000 teams a year, which seems impossible, but he does. He's one of 18 members of the player selection committee. I don't envy his job because I asked him, like, you got a Penn player and a Princeton player on the same team. Like, can you imagine if you have a shot for 50 grand and he's open? Like, what do?
You pass it to him.
Let me go ahead. I'm going to pulling up on the screen here. I've actually got – it's up on our website. I think there's links to it in all the most recent articles. But these are the pools and the players that are going to be on these teams. I'm going to take a quick look at these, actually. And, Rocco, there's pool one, which what we have is 7-4-team and 1-3-team pools. And the winner of each of these pools, which will play a round robin against each other, will each advance to the quarterfinals, which will be then a bracket format from the quarters, semis. I think it's a best of three final round. But pool one, the big team there is that Big 12 team. But, does that blow you away versus those other three teams there?
No, not necessarily. I think the Colonial team is pretty strong as well.
It is.
Yeah. It is.
My biggest concern is, if you watch the Charleston-Auburn game, Chaley, he was a little banged up with the knee. The fact that he's even playing in this tells me that he's probably good enough to be healthy throughout. So I'll bank on that. But I like that team. And then also, Chad, the thing that I thought was interesting is that they're going to score by ones and twos. Obviously, for any of us that have played pickup ball, it's a great advantage to have guys that can make twos. Now you're getting double credit instead of just an extra, two-thirds. So it's a big, big deal to have three-point shooters in it that can make with regularity. And I like the guys on the Colonial team for that, too.
Yeah. Matt, here's pool two with the ACC not having a sub. They're only going with Snyder, DeVoe, and Jackson, and a real interesting team out of the WAC, I think, here.
The 1-2 of the ACC team, too, that's no size. That's three guards who are all smallish, not like 6'2 and under, but yeah, that's one. The ACC somewhere, you get a swing guy, something to diversify that team a little bit. I worry. Any team with size would give that ACC team some trouble.
Well, you've got Cookman and FAMU players on the same team. What do you do with 50,000 on the line if someone's open there?
And a Delaware State player, too. I don't know if that MEAC team is going to compete, but I'm really interested with this Josh Braun, Jordan Hill, Brandon Randolph team out of the WAC. I think that this team could take this pool here.
Right.
Especially Joshua Braun. David, I think the team to beat in this event is going to be this Big East team, which was originally supposed to be Makura and Trevor Blewett from Xavier. Blewett just pulled out. Rodney Bullock has replaced him. This is a great Big East squad here, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, if you had those four in a starting lineup, that team would be pretty good. Here they are all on the same team. That's going to be something. And while you have some talent, I like this MAC team a lot, but not as much as the Big East team. They might just kind of blow through this. Now, what is it? You play a round robin group of three, and then they have a champion come out of that, and then it's a knockout round of the eight teams.
And then it's a knockout round of eight teams, and then two semifinals, and then a best of three final between the final two teams. The knockout round will be on Sunday. The round robins will be Friday and Saturday. Those will all be streamed on Twitter, by the way. The final round, two rounds, will be on ESPN2, I believe.
But as we'll get into a little bit later, there's going to be some pools that are a little shorthanded because not every conference submitted a roster.
Yeah, but Tytel, here's pool number four, where SEC team is supposed to be the big team, but I think we got a very interesting Northeast Conference team in it.
I was going to say the Summit might actually be a nice upset pick because Amigo's a big guy. Scott is a great scorer. Tellinghuizen, I got the interview a year or two ago. That being said, when I asked Santangelo about it, he thought that You can't just dump the ball inside to big man or just have three-point shooters. You need a mix of each. If I look at the SEC team, like, give it to Yonte Maiden and let him score inside. Nobody's going to stop him.
Yeah, but Rocco, Joel Fernandez, Junior Robinson, JoJo Cooper, I think that's going to be a fun NEC team. Even if they can't win games, it's fun to watch these guys.
It always is.
I agree, Chad. And I think with the money element, too, I mean, guys like Mateen and Robertson on the SEC, sure, they're much more talented and they could probably do what they want. But where's the motivation going to be compared to some of these guys that may never, you know, play again? They'll go take jobs after this. So that element, I think, could really, move the needle enough to get a few more upsets.
Yeah, I will say any of these guys playing this are playing professionally somewhere, though, at least for a few years, Rocco.
If you're up on the top
in any league, you're making money somewhere.
All right.
Yeah. Giddy pots.
Yeah, Matt, let me stick with you here. It's that pool five with a fun, interesting Big Ten team with Jay Sean Tate, Robert Johnson, Nate Mason there. But and Conference USA team, which is Giddy Potts and two guys from Florida Atlantic.
Ideally, that is just some of the team. I remember Riyad Howland's a real nice player in Mercer. Mm-hmm. And that's still probably favoring the Big Ten group. I think a nice balance of you got guards and shooters with Mason and Johnson, and then – Edwards, the nice slasher, and Tate, the 6'4 guy that plays about 6'10.
Yeah, the guy like Tate could just take over a game, and with 3-on-3, one guy could win the game for you, can't he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, that too. And if you double up on him, yeah, Johnson's capable enough shooter from the perimeter that even Mason, too. Now they won't be playing in Minnesota anymore.
Tytel, I got to go back to you for Pool 6 for two reasons. Number one, there's that Ivy League team you're talking about. And number two, this is the pool with only three teams in it because the Pac-12 didn't bother RSVPing with a group of four players.
Well, it's a shame because they've had plenty of time since none of them are live in a tourney or have been for several weeks now, it seems like. I think that Arizona was worried about having to face Wes Clark of Buffalo again because they already had him once. They don't want to see him again. Of these teams, as I went to the A-10 tourney and went to an Ivy League school, I'm kind of torn. I wish Bucknell could throw a couple more players out there just because they have so much talent in their starting five. I really don't know, though, like, if I'm Amir Bell at Princeton and there's 50 grand on the line and I have a couple of Penn guys open, like, you have to make the open pass. But what if they fought, like, in the regular season? Or what if they have been, like, battling each other for 4 years and they just hate each other with this raw – red hatred.
You still make the pass. Now, how did this, like, did the conferences submit the roster? Like, what's to stop four Pac-12 players from just showing up?
Well, apparently there was some type of, I don't know the exact process. Yeah. All I know is what they announced on Twitter today is that the Pac-12 failed to RSVP on time and therefore does not have any teams in here.
Dave, well, you could do a lot of Mad Libs with the Pac-12 failed too, and then just fill in the blank after that. It was just not there.
That is very true. When the Missouri Valley Conference earned more NCAA tournament credits this year than the Pac-12 did, it's pretty darn sad.
Quickly, look at Pool 6 there. Matt Mobley, he's the type of guy I think he could just carry a team maybe all the way through this bracket. He's that good at, I think, this format's so favorable to him because he's got such a versatile score.
I'll tell you, though, Matt, that Patriot League team with the two guys in Bucknell and both Swapshire and Ross can score there, too, from Colgate and Lehigh. I mean, I think this could be, without a Pac-12 team that should have been in this pool, I think it's a very interesting little pool.
Well, that Pac-12 team might have finished third in the pool anyway, so.
There we go, Stalika. Here's pool number seven with two guys from Wichita State here on the American team, and I think that's going to be heads and shoulders above everyone else here.
Benzinger.
I'm looking to avoid a joke where it's going to be tough for the American to score in this pool, but as the puppet was alluding to, you have to like the chances for the Horizon with Benzinger and Holland, and I think there was, who was it, Kendrick Nunn that pulled out late for the Horizon League.
Yeah, so now they're down to only three players, which without a substitute, with none having pulled out late, you're right.
But still, that's going to be a very potent trio there, to say nothing of what the West Coast Valley will be putting out there. Or West Coast, I should say.
The OVC team's kind of intriguing to me. Like, no huge names per se, but knowing that they're all might blend together real well, it might be the chemistry unit.
Yeah, Luke's good.
Rocco, here's the final pool here is pool eight, which has the Missouri Valley and the Mountain West teams. But
it's a front range team. Oh, no, there's a more.
I'm fascinated by this America East team, actually.
Yeah, Trey Bell Haynes is a stud, as we know. And Thomas. And Thomas can fill it up. So, yeah, I think American East team's got a real good chance here. I'm not overwhelmed by either the MVC or the MWC rosters. I think the American East has a real good shot. I like the two Asheville players too. Any of these four could come out of here, I think. The Mountain West, I don't know a lot about the Air Force guys. I admittedly didn't watch a lot of Air Force hoops this year. I do know Jamel Taylor. He's a former UW player. He can score a little bit, but he's not as dominant as some of these other guys. So,
man, I wish they could got Darius Lyles on that America East team.
Seriously, where's the UMBC guys? It's ridiculous.
You know what? Lyles was – their nominees to make the field. I guess for some reason he must have passed up the appearance. I think there are a lot of guys that actually passed up appearances. But let me through. Anyone have a pick to who's going to win this entire event?
Yes,
Matt or Rocco. Okay,
I'm going to take the American Conference. I know that they got Tyson and the Central Florida guy, but I know if you just put Morris and Francamp together, that is like, you can put any other two guys with those two, and I'd pick them to win. They got the inside, outside. Nobody can shoot better than Francamp. Morris will get all the rebounds on shots he doesn't make. And then I imagine that Tyson or David will hit anything happening mid-range on double teams. I think this American team is set up perfectly for the tournament.
Well, Matt, you want to set him straight being a Big East guy?
Yeah, I was that was the Big East team. I think – this March, you're going to have Andrew Rousey and J.P. McKeever win the 3-on-3. Next March, they're winning the tag team titles at WrestleMania.
I know
talking coming from those two should be pretty incredible.
I know they had a really disappointing NCAA tournament, like not getting a team past the round of 64, but I think the Pac-12 can redeem itself and win this event.
Yeah, let's go ahead and pull that down. And I don't know, let me run through everybody here for a little, any other final thoughts about the 3x3, the NCAA tournament, anything else we want to discuss. And Tytel, let me start with you.
So some interesting news today. Syracuse incoming McDonald's All-American Darius Baisley is now Syracuse's decommitted McDonald's All-American, as he decided after committing to them last June. It's not like a split-second decision. He said today, I'm going to go to the G League instead because it's going to prepare me for pro basketball, which is my dream. I hope he enjoys next year's salary of around $25,000 a year. I hope he makes the league because we've seen other guys who have bailed on their college teams, like Brandon Jennings at Arizona, like Terrence Ferguson at Arizona. It's nice to see somebody else have to deal with it. I think this is a huge mistake because I'd rather go to Syracuse and be a god on campus than go to the G League and be a nobody. But good luck, Darius. You're going to need it.
And maybe that'll be a topic for the offseason, whether or not this is something that this may be the start of something new, which may kill the one and dones. And but we'll reach that point at some point, probably during the offseason. Salika, let me hear from you next.
Yeah, I wasn't here early to discuss some of the coaching changes, but needless to say, I'm going to have to weigh in with Chris Mack moving down.
We didn't discuss them, so take it away.
Yeah, with Chris Mack officially moving down South 71 to Louisville, we're going to see how Louisville is going to perform, considering they'll have not an NCAA investigation right now, but at least the cloud of it with the FBI investigation still ongoing. But at the same time, Xavier is also going to have a plum job themselves to offer, and we're going to see just what kind of plan Greg Christopher had when he became AD at Xavier back in 2013 when Mike Babinski left, because during those interviews when they were interviewing candidates, I'm sure they were going to be saying, what's your plan going to be if and when Chris Mack does leave? And we'll see what the state of the program is going forward, because so far I think there was a graduate transfer from Dartmouth and Evan Boudreau who decommitted and ended up committing to Purdue. So we'll see in the next couple weeks just what the dominoes will be from this coaching change, as well as Danny Hurley from UConn that we already learned about last week.
Well, you know, Frank Haith is available. That's all I got to say. Matt, your thoughts?
No, I will be continuing this, and I'm going all in on Chris Mackin. Not necessarily personally, because even though I'm obviously the Big East guy here, I just think it's a grave career risk and probably end up being a mistake. I think he's thinking he's going to the Louisville, the whatever, shiny program, all the Final Fours under Pitino, and that. But, man, that is a program is a mess. And not to say only basketball program. Athletics in general with Tom Jarrett. That was like kind of like a shell game he built all there. All the money that I don't think all these guys he recruited will be donating as much. Like in the academic side, no president. The board's a mess. Yeah, the Kentucky governor instituted their own board. I'm thinking, why? I think he has a shiny view of the Louisville job. His wife is from there. But, like, why risk you had a top 20, 15, 20 thing going in Xavier? Why risk that for what Louisville could easily be a mess? And it's a mess not even including basketball. So I get why he did it, but really, if you thought about it, I don't get why he did it. And I think someone needed to knock his head off the clouds. It probably wasn't in one of his coaching friends or someone, not someone in, with Xavier or Louisville. But, yeah, this I think is going to be a grave mistake for Chris Mack.
Well, I think it's going to come down to – personally, I think it's going to come down to how quickly he can, and because it's going to take a couple of years. And he's – I mean, kind of gives him the blank slate to rebuild on one hand, but how much patience does Louisville have for him? Because it's going to take time. And a day where we're seeing coaches after 1 or 2 years getting fired from their jobs these days, which I think is absolutely wrong. But Rocco, let me turn to you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm mainly just trying to focus on these three games coming up, the 2 Saturday and the 1 Monday, because, you know, as we all get to this time of year, it kind of gets a little depressing. You know, we've been watching and following all these games and all these teams for 5 months straight. Now all of a sudden it's over. So it's a tough pill to swallow after Monday's over. It's already been tough now with only 4 teams left. And then I do want to, you know, say that I'm anticipating fully next month with the board of directors and the commission on college basketball meetings beginning in April. I can't say I'm expecting a ton to come out of that, but I'm really hoping that some of the changes that are proposed, you know, get instilled before next year so we can start cleaning up the sport. So we'll have to, you know, we'll all be on the email thread and all that. So looking forward to seeing what comes of that.
Yeah, and we'll be doing off-season podcasts as well. I think we do about once per month in which we can discuss some of the things that come out of it. But David, I know you had a little bit of news for us to finish the show off.
Yes, well, the sideline reporting throughout the season, I normally don't pay attention to the press conferences. And believe it or not, I don't really follow the media, read articles, or follow that at all. I watch games and I talk to you all. But during the tournament, you can't help but kind of notice some of it. And some of the sideline reporting and press conference questions have been utterly atrocious, just stupidly bad. To ask Loyola, how did a little school from Chicago get to the Final Four? I so wish the guy would have just said, well, we won in the Elite Eight or something like that. Like, and then you saw what happened with Leonard Hamilton blowing up about what – to be honest, it wasn't a bad question at all, but, like, it was a standard question. It was, like, what you would expect a reporter to ask. Why was everyone high-fiving this person as if it was the most – insightful question ever as to how she handled it. So what I've done, would you like to see them? I have put together a list of questions that I think reporters should be asking, and I'd like to share those right now, if that's okay. Can we get those on the screen? I believe here we go.
Okay, there you go.
Do you see the – okay, here we go. First question, this is for Tony Bennett. Coach, you just lost to a 16 seed. Tell me, do you wish you would have won? Like, that's okay. That's the first one. Here we go. Who's next? Oh, this one's for Bruce Pearl. Coach, do you think things would have been easier had the other team's coach been arrested by the FBI instead? Like, again, these are good questions that reporters are asking. Who's next? Oh, here's one for Mick Cronin. This is a big game, but Kansas and Missouri would be bigger. What are your thoughts on that series coming back? You know, nobody asked that. Why didn't anyone ask that during the tournament after they had lost to Nevada? Like, and here's one for John Calipari. Tim Miles would have won this game. what do you need to do to be as good as he is? Like, no one asks questions like that. Why don't they ask questions like that? And then I think there's just one more. Is it just one? Oh, yeah. Coach, I've just heard the other team got free chili after their win. Does that add to your disappointment? Because, you know, we're giving away free chili here. But you just, again.
This is why David Griggs is not a sideline reporter, clearly. I guess on that note, I don't think we could do anything more. So I want to thank everyone for joining us. On behalf of Matt Sikowski, Rocco Miller, John Tytel, John Slica, David Griggs, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the Final Four and the National Championship and watching One Shining Moment. And we will talk to you all again at some point real soon.